Welcome to Cold Omaha's special presentation this week. I'm joined in studio by Carl East. Carl,
good to be here, Danny.
And Tony Scott.
How you doing, Danny?
Good, good. And special guest today, Bill McCarthy. Bill, how are you doing?
Just tremendous tonight, Dan.
we have you on because, well, your storied history as far as Minnesota hockey is concerned and hockey in general, you're a former scout for the Ottawa Senators. Why don't we go with what's your background in hockey? Give us a little recap, although it's long, make it a little short.
Sure. Yeah, I'll cut out most of the middle part. I grew up in Toronto, Ontario, and played hockey up through junior hockey there. I was on my way to a hockey scholarship down at Bowling Green State University. But Ronnie Mason as a coach, broke my knee the night before I was going and became a referee about a week later. I never did play college hockey. Ended up moving down to Minnesota with my brother Tom, who played, I think, 7 years with the North Stars and a couple of years with the Bruins. I have since stayed in Minnesota, refereed good old District 6 hockey for about 24 years, coached high school hockey for about 15 years, and then one day after I was done coaching and still teaching where I do now at St. Thomas Academy, got a call from Frankie J., who was the head scout of at Ottawa at the time, and Kenny Williamson, who was the scout in the area, had just passed away, and they were in need of someone to cover high school and college and junior games, and I knew Frank, and Frank called up one morning and said, "Are you interested?" And I said, "Well, let me think about it. give me a week." Honest to gosh, I said, "Give me a week." And so I called a couple people, Tom Osiki and my father, my brother, and everybody I spoke to said it's a great opportunity. And so I called Frank back the next day, and he kind of read me the riot act. He said, "You told me you're going to tell me next week." And I said, "Well, Frank, I didn't sleep last night, so I didn't think I wanted to not sleep for 7 days." Yeah. So I ended up being assigned as an amateur scout, a part-time amateur scout, and was able to teach at the same time. And generally, people who get into the activity of scouting either know somebody or are former players. And in my case, I played a little bit, but I knew enough. Frankie actually drafted my brother in the OHA at the time, not the OHL like it's known now. He played in Oshawa. And so I knew Frank, and I'd seen him when he'd come through. When I was coaching, I'd talk to him because he would do the area. He'd cross over, come down, and see games down here. So he called and said, "Am I interested?" I said, "Sure." And, you know, I hung up the phone and said, "What the heck did I just get myself into?" Because I had no idea what to do. And honestly, it took me probably a year and a half, 2 years, before I could actually speak half intelligently about players and about what I'd seen and what I was looking for and that kind of routine. I remember Frank was a big help, as were a lot of the local guys who, like you've seen Danny for sure, and Carl, I know, and Tony, mm-hmm. you know, you see the same 12, 15 guys at all the games you go to.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, so you talk about, you know,
it's like a fraternity,
but you don't, yeah, a little bit, but you don't get players. You just talk about how to do things and where to go and things like that. So for me, I was very fortunate. I had a good understanding of Minnesota's hockey in terms of high school, especially, and I had to learn a little bit about the USHL. I had seen it a bit when the Vulcans were in town. I think Mark Osiki was coaching when I went after he played for us in Burnsville. So I had a little exposure there, and certainly the WCHA because of the Gophers. So for me, it was a very exciting time. And it sort of, I don't want to say fell into it, but had the opportunity to develop how to do it. But it grew up, it sort of grew out of knowing people from before and having some understanding of the game and the people involved, certainly in Minnesota.
Well, you are one of the more intelligent hockey minds that I've been around, and that's why I always enjoyed sitting next to you at rinks, because you know what to look for, not only as a coach, but I mean, you've been around great hockey talent your whole life, so I would always be enthralled. You would say just little tidbits and stuff like that, and it'd be really interesting to just hear your side of the story on stuff. And how long did you coach at Burnsville for?
9 years. I worked primarily with the B squad, with the JV, but I ended up doing a couple of years, I think it was 2 years, with the varsity, but was always involved with, you know, both teams. There was a staff down there, Tom Osiki and Bruce Anderson, and I was fortunate enough to get exposure to Minnesota high school hockey the first year.
Which years were you there?
Pardon me?
Which years were you there?
84 is when I started.
Oh, the glory years. Yeah, yeah. There, boy.
Might as well win as long as you're there, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those bits. We had 14 players who went on to play D1 sports, so that wasn't a bad team. One of them was a golfer, so that's a little outlier, but Mike Luckcraft went to the U as a golfer.
Yeah.
It was nice to have a nice hockey club like that, and my exposure, we go to the tournament and win it the first year. And so it was like, I thought that's what you did down here. 18,000 people, and they're all, you know, invested in it, and it's part of life. And for me, it's always learning. And I'm like that as a teacher. I'm like that as a father, I hope, with my three daughters, and have always wanted to be a little bit better and try to figure out how you can do that with whatever craft you're involved with. And it included scouting as well.
Well, you had some definite glory years there. I got these young bucks with me in this studio, Bill, and they have no idea who Kelly Ramswick is or Lance Wernes. I mean, these guys were legends.
Yeah. Who are these people, Danny? Who are these people?
Oh, Mr. Hockey Award, Scott Bloom. I mean, these guys were awesome.
Well, they think Kevin Gorg is a legend just in his own mind. Gorgie had a tremendous run for us, and he was quite a character as a high school goalie. And kind of significant thing about Gorgie, he never liked the puck in his net as a goaltender. I mean, during practice, you know, the coach would say, put the pucks in the net, and Gorgie would never put him in his net. He'd always pick him up and put him on top. And he's literally so I got a chance to meet some characters, like you're saying, in terms of some great people, in terms of high school kids. And I had a great influence of Tom Osiecki in terms of evaluating people and not just hockey players. And I think that aspect of a scout's job and certainly other jobs. I mean, not just hockey if you're running a business, but you want to have good people involved. And you can usually teach them to be pretty good hockey players as long as they're good people. And that's a big deal for me when I was sort of changing my eyes, I always say, because you have different eyes for being a referee, and being a coach, being a fan. Of course, the ones that when you're being a fan are always objective. And that's why I used to like to sit beside Danny, because he never said anything wrong about Grand Rapids, ever. But that was okay. I don't know where that came from, right, Danny?
Well, that came from Patrick White. But
sure. Where is Whitey right now?
Well, Whitey's playing over in Europe in one of those Premier Leagues. Sort of.
It's a bit of a commute for his parents now. It never used to be.
Well, let's talk about kind of branching off of, you know, Pat White. What do you look for as a scout, when you walk into a rink, how do you evaluate players?
Well, first of all, you got to know where you're going and who you're looking for. And sort of if we take a step back, and I'll get to your question, the answer I hope for you. But when I worked for Ottawa, the organization was interested in a player that could play for an NHL team that's going to win the Stanley Cup. And that was sort of our bottom line. If he was pretty good and he was good in the high school game and he was the best kid on the ice, that didn't necessarily qualify him to be the best player that you wanted to have on your NHL team that's going to win a Stanley Cup. And so we looked at a number of, I would say, 7 or 8 things that were fairly critical. Everything from some of the logical things you think, can he skate, can he handle the puck, does he shoot it okay? But for me, it was level of compete. It was intelligence. It was ability to understand the game and think the game, because I'm pretty sure I can teach almost any hockey player to go through the cones and do what they're supposed to and get to the other end real quickly. But can they think the game, and do they understand what their role is and what they can contribute to the team being successful? It's always a good sort of landmark for me. It was, will the skills transfer, but can he be a player that's going to contribute and make a winning team better? It's hard to do with this, you know, 17-year-old who you literally look at and they can't even get themselves their shirt tied up, you know, their tie tied up correctly or the shoes done up. And you're trying to project 5-6 years from now what kind of hockey player and young man they're going to be. So you had to have some standards. And mine were intelligence, ability to compete, think the game, and you had to have some skills. I mean, in baseball, they talk about 5-tool players. Certainly hockey has the same type of metaphors in terms, can he shoot it? Can he pass it? Does he have hands? Does he think the game? Can he skate back? You know, all those kinds of what seem to be for me and for most people, you know, pretty logical skills. But you find that if you put them all together and you take somebody like a George Schrader in the high school level, you have a kid with dementia. And dementia is a term that kind of ties them all together. And if you have dementia, if Matt Niskanen had dementia, if Matt Niskanen didn't have dementia, no one did. He could play and think it and take a penalty to rest, so he would only have to play 48 minutes a game. But you try and put the package together and anticipate 5 years from now what kind of young man this is going to be and what his skills going to be that's going to contribute to a successful hockey club.
So I know that you guys have to sit down as scouts and interview these kids or try to interview as many as you can. Walk us through that. Give us 2-3 questions that would be maybe different from you as a scout or from the next scout might ask. What are the questions they ask them?
Well, most times you got to be a little careful about it because, first of all, there's 15 other guys in the hallway or at the rink. If you go downstairs and say I'm gonna interview Danny Ryan tonight, it's like what's the movie where they went from different gates to different gates, right? Everybody shows up with this kid now. So you have to be a little clandestine. You gotta make sure you have your spots. But in general, when I would talk to a player, I'd ask him to tell me about himself first off. You know, what kind of player are you? How'd you play tonight? What'd you think of this position? What was going on in this play? And you get an idea of how he thinks the game and sort of how he's going to have rapport with people. I often asked about their family, asked about his interests away from the game. It is always important to me, and it's the same as any kind of, valid athlete. You know, what kinds of other things do you do? I was never a you must be a 24/7 hockey player guy. I never understood it very much in terms of life, because my philosophy was really simple. You have to live for 80 and play for 8. And most of you have already played 5, so we got to figure this out because you're going to be done. I heard a stat actually today that said the average length of player time in the NHL is 5 years. So if you're going to put 5 years in the channel and think the other 75 you got coming is worthwhile, I tried to find that out about a kid, and I understand about being dedicated. I understand about, you know, having an interest and a focus and all those things that are very important. But I want to make sure the kid had some balance in his life. That let's say, and I'll speak from experience, that his knee breaks the day before he's going to college hockey. What are you going to do? I mean, it's only hockey, but it's very important, and it's in his perspective, and it has balance. And I think that, not just with hockey, but I think that with people in life too. I mean, you should be involved with music, and you should be an engineer, and you should be able to use a broom, and you know what I'm saying? You should be able to do a lot of things, not just this. Because what if it doesn't go right? It's only hockey.
Yeah, right.
For me, I tried to find out their perspective on it and understand what they wanted to be.
So, Bill, were there any red flags that would come up then that you would say,
oh, yeah,
no way?
A kid would tell you he's as good as, you know, Nick Lidstrom. And I'd say, wait a second, you know, like, well, be in there. You know, that kind of routine. And you'd really have a moment in the conversation where you'd say, tell me what skills you have that you think are like his. And he would say, you know, I shoot the puck like him. The guy's going to be in the Hall of Fame, son. Okay. And so you try and find out sort of where they are in their development. Yeah. And sometimes it's a little brash and it's a little to the point. I went down to see a player in Dubuque, and that's a bit of a haul. You know, leaving from here, got down, watched, got into the rink just in time for warm-ups, and had my lineups prepared, and they give you a line sheet, and I knew who I was there to see, and this kid starts. Right off the face-off, the other centerman gives him the stick right in the house, and he goes down in front of the net, same shift, and stabs the kid right in the throat. I mean, literally spears him. The ref kicks him out of the game. Now, this is 38 seconds into the game. It's a nice trip, wasn't it? You know, that's a 400-mile trip. And we find out he's going to play the next night. He's just got a game DQ, not suspension. So we stick around for the game, and I interviewed him after the game. And I was interested in the kid. He's good talent, and he's actually playing in the NHL right now. And I said to him, you know, pretty interesting game. I said, what were you thinking? And I said, there's 15 NHL teams in the building right now. And what were you thinking when you took the stab at it? Well, like, those things happen, he said. And I just looked right at him in the eye and I said, well, it's not going to happen for us.
Yeah.
And it's just like, he was amazed that I would actually decide that that kind of behavior is not, he was as selfish as I've ever seen in that situation. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of things, sometimes those interviews go that way. Okay, we're done. I mean, you don't get it. And you obviously don't want to compromise and get yourself better. Because for me, that was always a bit, you know, do you want to compete? Do you want to be better? And try to find that out when you talk to kids. You usually can.
How often do you need to see players? I mean, I go to a lot of games, but how many games did you go to, sort of thing, in your
heyday?
Well,
we would, as a full-time guy, you'd see between 200 and 220 games a year. And I saw about 150 to 160. If I was following a player who's going to be a top two round draft pick, you'd probably see him between 8 and 10 times.
You'd write a report on him too, right?
Sure. Yeah. And you start making stuff up after the eighth time. Like you got a different color of blue you're using, you know what I mean, to say he's a blue player. You know what I'm saying? But you should see a player two or three times, and you should know pretty well his tendencies. You should be able to sort of slot him in your ranking, you know, session. That was the ideal sort of you go into. I went to Michigan to see a player. And I saw him two times, you know, Friday, Saturday game, and pretty confident in what he was like after you'd seen him twice in 2 days. That's a luxury. You don't get that a lot in a row.
Here's an oddball question for you. So, and it's very pertinent to what
Ryan's in the studio, and you're telling me there's no
yeah. So this one's a little bit off the wall, but it's okay. Relevant because it's high school related.
Sure.
So you get a kid like Jackson Nelson. I realize he's a couple years away from draft eligibility, but here he's going to break every scoring record in the state's history.
Sure.
He's playing against what many consider to be low level competition. That's saying it politely, right?
Oh.
How do you get an average gauge? How do you get a gauge of a kid who's not playing, you know, apples to apples competition?
Well, I would use two criteria all the time. I would use two columns. We'll say ability and performance. And so you have to develop a way of understanding what you think an A-level hands evaluation is, or an A-level skater is, or a B-level skater is, and then you have to see how he competes. And like you're saying, if the competition and they're playing games where they're winning by a touchdown every night, and it's a tough, you know, it's a tough apples-to-apples comparison, you try to look at things like all-star games. You try and look at showcase games. You try to pick the game where they're going to play against a team that's not going to be a runaway situation, so you can see him in those situations. But it does present some difficulty. I mean, there's players, you know, I could give you 30 guys where we've been to see them and say, gosh, you should have seen how well he played. Mm-hmm. And then the next night somebody will come in to see him, and he might as well have been in the stands with us because he didn't do a thing because the competition was way better and he disappeared. And so you have some caution, but at the same time, if you like what you see and you like his skills and you understand that he's competing at a level that may not be as good as you want it to be, you have to take some chances. You have to have a little leaps of faith. When you're my size, that's a big leap. You know that. Eh? But you have to just sort of go on your instincts and watch him. And you have to watch him away from the puck. You have to watch him off the ice. You have to watch him. All those little things like that that you have to, as I mentioned before, character is a big deal because you're going to have to pay a guy $3 million. You're not just going to give some tomfoolery skullduggery guy $3 million. So you're doing all kinds of – and even when he's not playing against great competition, you still have to sometimes take a leap of faith but trust your instincts a bit.
Talk to me a little bit about draft night. Did you ever take part in draft night where the
oh yeah.
Okay, so at draft night, you know, player X comes on the board and they're thinking about him, and then they say, "Hey Bill, do you want player, should we take player X?" Or they put you on the spot.
Sure.
And you have to have, you've seen him play 7-10 times. What do you do?
One time. We were sitting in Minnesota at the draft, and our assistant GM walked down to me and said, "Do you want to trade for this spot so we can draft this guy right now?" You want to talk about a rush, eh? You want to talk about holy mackerel, right? Either I'm fired or I'm not fired. not a big deal. And so luckily I said, no, I don't want him. And now I don't think he's playing. But he was a local kid who was well touted. And that rush of knowing what could happen, it's certainly a factor. But when we got to the table, our list was our list. And we very rarely went away from our list. We would take a list of, and many teams do this. Many teams have a number of meetings, and then they have, let's say, 10 guys that have their areas, and then they meld this area list into one overall list, and then they put it together for draft day, and it's literally one through probably about 160. Because there's other teams that are going to pick people that you don't even want on your list. It's going to happen, just your priorities and just your interests. But very rarely would we get to a guy and we'd say the guy underneath him, you know, we think might be better. Well, we should have had that already done. So it was a little bit less pressure of the moment and a little bit better planning and understanding and doing your homework and doing the collaboration with all your group and individual scouts, that it really wasn't a pressure thing, even though, you know, like that time I explained to you, you know, we're going to make a trade. Do you want this guy? And I didn't. And they often would go to the area guy who will have seen the player certainly more than the head scout will, or even the area guy, some of the area guys that cross over. But the tables generally run that way if they're well organized and they've done all their homework. Most of the work's in the barn. The hay's in the barn before you get to the table, you know, so, and you're paying attention to. And quite honestly, as I come to learn, you get to know what Toronto's going to pick, or who Philly's looking for, or who Edmonton's interested in. You just, because unfortunately, I think scouts talk too much to each other, and I'm going to say that as a person who never shuts up, But I've never talked about a player to another scout. I'll talk about a restaurant or a way to go the back way to Sioux Falls or down to Des Moines, but it was a constitutional commitment that I would never do and share. And it was respect for them and respect for us. But you knew who was on the table, who was on your list and at the table. It was exciting. It was exciting to hear and wait. I can give you 10 times when we wanted a guy and somebody took it two steps ahead of us, and you kind of deflated and you get rallied and away you go. But it's a very high pressure, focused, and it's a job on the floor. And the guys that run the table are very good at what they do.
Who's the one that got away? In your mind.
There's a list.
Well, I mean, for Minnesotans that people would know here.
Sure. We were interested in guys like Brock Nelson and Kyle Oposo, guys like that, who, when you say got away, it's not like a college recruiting thing where, you know, you decided to commit to play in Wisconsin instead of Minnesota. You couldn't get to the guy. Yeah. You had him ranked 104th, and he went 102, you know, because it's that fine. But rarely did, I mean, the flip side is you took Eric Carlson with a 15th pick. It was a bad 15th pick.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But there were guys that were in other people's lists ahead of them. So it depends what your commitment is, depends what your interest is, and sometimes your knowledge. I mean, there's good staffs and there's really good staffs. I mean, most of the staffs in the NHL are really good. They know what they're doing. And then once in a while, they'll hit a bone inside the chicken, you know what I mean? And they got to adjust a bit. I could literally go every list in the last 10 years and show you five guys that we just loved that we couldn't get to. And that's mostly what happens versus, geez, we chose not to take them. You know what I'm saying?
So we're going to do a little speed round with you. We're going to talk about some draft eligibles this year that are Minnesota natives. Most are playing high school hockey, but one is playing for the U.S. Development Program. Kiefer Bellis. We'll start with him first. And we're just going to let us know what you think of him and where he might fall.
Well, when you said speed round, so far I haven't been able to be very speedy.
I know, but just try your best.
Relative.
Well, his dad played with my brother, so I know the family well. I mean, great competitor, little edge to his game, can shoot the puck. would like to see him play the game a little bit better without the puck, and he's getting that that well-rounded approach, but he certainly competes and can score some big goals. He has some good intensity around the net.
You see him as a top 10 pick?
I think he's certainly going to have a chance to be there, but when you don't know Europe very well and you don't know, so he's certainly going to be an upper round. He's going to be top 15, I would say, and he's the kind of kid where you say, I love him, so you're going to take him fourth. Or you're going to take, you know what I mean? It's going to be one of those routines. He's a hell of a hockey player.
All right, Riley Tufte.
His vision in the game has improved immensely, which allows him to manage the game well. I really liked that development in him. I think his toughness in his skating is also sort of commensurate with his maturity. I think he's got a chance to be, again, it's probably in the same vein. And is he Bukestad number two to me? Not quite, but he's certainly a pretty good hockey player.
Michael Graham.
How fast is Michael Graham?
You told me he needs a ticket to move.
Honest to God. When he was a sophomore, I remember writing him up as a sophomore, which was rare. It's 2 years away from being draft eligible. And just loving how quickly he went and how sharp his mind was, how quickly he can influence the play and challenge the other team. And it's one of his great assets. The other night I was there to see his team play and he didn't play, which a little disappointment, but I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good hockey player. He's got some great, great nose around the net, great intensity to the net from the blue line.
All right. Mitchell Mattson.
What do you want me to tell you about Matt?
Best player all
you're
time from Grand
next
Rapids.
To his brother-in-law there, right? I'm just kidding. You're sitting next to his brother-in-law. I don't want to step on his toes, right?
Now, tell you what.
I probably can't give you much more than not a great sort of top-end guy. And I remember him being sort of involved with everything. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to tell you much about him that isn't sort of pretty good, but I don't have a great – I like this about him. Wasn't that familiar with him.
Some high school players, you obviously have Smallage at school with you, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
So let's hear about him.
Wants to do as well as anybody I've ever talked with. Calculates the game well, bit of a caretaker, but a smart hockey player. And when he plays without reserve, he's very effective, can make plays. But he's a very responsible person, which bleeds over into his game a bit and sometimes makes him a little deliberate in his play. But I've seen him play a couple times this year and got a chance to advance his game. I think he's going to be certainly a middle to upper defenseman in any lineup he'll be put in.
What about Billy Jerry on the same team?
Billy Jerry. If Billy Jerry is the most honest player I've ever talked to, in at least the last 5 years, I don't know if there is one. He wants so badly to do so well and what's right. And his older brother, I watched play a little bit in Cedar Rapids, and so mm-hmm. the family's well aware of what it takes, and Billy is too. He wants what's best and tries his hardest. And if there were 27 hours in a day, he'd spend the other three, in addition to the 24, thinking about how he can make himself better as a hockey player. So he's very honest and earnest. And when his game is simple, and his game is just trust, he's the most effective in terms of his time on the ice. When he tries to do a little too much, he gets himself challenged beyond his limits. And he's got some skills, and he's certainly got to get stronger and quicker, and he knows that. But he works his tail off at it. He's a pretty good leader off the ice for that club, too.
I got two other kids that aren't playing high school hockey in Minnesota, but are from here and are playing in the USHL now. Max Zimmer.
I don't know Zimmer well at all. I'm gonna take a pass.
Okay. And Matt Kierstad.
The defenseman from Edina.
Elk River.
Elk River. Okay. First day on the job. Easy. Hey, Gordy Roberts guy.
Yeah.
Liked him tremendously when I saw him, and I thought he flattened out at the end of the year last year. I certainly haven't seen him play this year. I don't know what his toughness is like, but he had a little edge to him that sometimes got in the way as a high school player. And I think he tried to do a little bit too much most of the time with the puck when I saw him play.
Which is pretty common for It's pretty common for a number one defenseman on a high school team. Is like kind of they think they have to do more than they actually have to.
Yeah, you know what else happens with that guy is he's also a senior now, and that's a funny time when you go from the junior who nobody's really talking about and nobody's worried about if you're exactly doing everything perfectly to the guy who feels like he has to be a leader and has to do things and has to, you know, not make mistakes, and all of a sudden there's the rest of the world that he's preparing for. It's a hard thing for seniors, especially until about Christmas time when they figure out what their real role is. You know, I always say when the honeymoon's over at Christmas, sometimes that first defenseman's like that. And maybe that's a little bit of Smolich's world, too.
Okay. You
know, he's got a junior partner there that's doing pretty well with him, too. Stucker does okay for him.
Yeah.
All right. There's plenty of other 98 or draft eligibles from Minnesota. Any sleepers out there that you saw over the last couple of years that you think might sneak into the draft or will be considered?
Well, in, I'm going to tell you honestly, and this is something I learned obviously as a scout too. If I don't know something, I'm not going to tell you about it. I haven't seen enough this year to tell you if somebody's jumped up and I liked them before. Now, I don't have a good feel for something current for you. I don't want to. Mm-hmm. Don't want to light the wrong phone lines up for him.
Right.
This guy's great and this guy's horrible. You know, the bottom line is there's going to be kids that I don't like, and it's only my opinion. And there's kids that I like, and that's my opinion too. And there's besides the parents and 100 people watching the game, that's always the bit. But it would be way past my line to tell you this guy or that guy, because I really haven't even seen guys that, you know, enough to tell you for this year's crop.
Okay.
Give me a little assignment. Give me a couple of weeks. I'll get back to you.
There we go.
Okay. Wrap it up. Give us one good story that, you know, Minnesota hockey fans would like about, you know, somebody recent or something like that.
Sure. Nick Leddy played at Eden Prairie. Lee Smith's his coach. And Nick was obviously an attractive player, even though in his senior year, their team didn't score a lot of goals. So you always had to explain to our head scout that he only had 18 points at Christmas, and he only had 29 by the end of the year. I can't remember. It was something like that. Yeah, because they always won 3-2 and 2-1. And so I got to know Nick a little bit, and he was a kid who was a typical high school kid. And every time I saw Nick, he had his hat on backwards. And we talk about stuff off the ice, and one day I call him over and I said, come here. And I said, you see how you're wearing your hat? I said, I'm happy for you, but I'm going to tell you something. That every NHL team that comes in and sees your hat on backwards, they're going to think you're such and such and so and so. And he kind of looked at me, and, you know, he was respectful, like Nick always has been. And he said thank you and walked away. And next time I saw him, as he came out of the dressing room, he moved his hat from his back to his front, which was kind of, you know, he didn't think I saw him. And then we had our head scout come in, and he caught him with his hat on backwards. And I swear, he come over to him, he said, I just had my hat on backwards because I had something else I was doing with my other hand. I'm sorry. And he felt like he was under the microscope. Like that. And it was a funny little thing because Nick can play. I mean, no doubt. And he's having, you know, he's really had a great extension, early extension to his career in New York. And he came back after they won the Stanley Cup. And he actually came in with his hat on forwards. And I was already in Prairie watching the game. And he came back and he came right to me, not his mom and dad, which they're still kind of a little upset about. And he said, I just want you to know I wear my hat on forwards all the time. And that's the kind of kid he is. That's the kind of kid, you know, he was willing to learn. He was willing to understand. And it's just little idiosyncrasies, but that's the kind of kid he is. And it's just he's proud to be a part of, you know, development and such. And that kind of thing has always stuck with me about Nick. He's a tremendous hockey player and a tremendous person.
Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here. Thank you for coming on. Your insights are always very well struck. I miss not having, you know, the pleasure to sit by you at games, and so.
Well, you're very flattering. You know, most times when I'd say get away from me after the second period, it's because, you know, I had to do some work, not just trying to entertain you.
Which you were. So I guess we'll see you maybe hopefully one time at a rink this year, maybe when the cadets are playing. But thanks again for coming on.
Well, tremendous, fellas. Thank you for having me. I've had a chance to listen to you on the air, and you do a tremendous job. Just thanks for letting me be a part of it today.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay. Bye. Okay, you can hang up. Thanks for everything.
I hope we did okay.
You did great.
Yeah. That sounded awesome.
That's really good.
Half hour segment.
I'll do a little homework for you and give you the underagers next time, right?
Awesome.
That sounds good. That sounds like a plan.
All right, fellas. Have a good night.
You too.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Hey guys, this is Tom Schreier, co-founder of ColdOmaha.com. Thank you for listening to the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and leave us a comment and a rating. Also, don't forget to check out ColdOmaha.com to see all of our podcasts and read articles about your favorite teams in the Twin Cities. If you have any suggestions or comments on anything related to Cold Omaha, email us at editors@ColdOmaha.com or follow us on Twitter @ColdOmahaMN.